From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Archaeologists have determined that 900 graves lie unmarked at the John N. Smith Cemetery in Southport. This African-American cemetery in the heart of Southport has stories both known and many that are yet to be uncovered. The oldest headstone with a date of death in 1874 belongs to John N. Smith himself. While historians and archaeologists don't know much about the cemetery's namesake, they are in the process of locating more unmarked graves and trying to figure out who else might be buried there. Today, we're going to find out why we know so little about the people buried there, why this burial ground has been neglected for so long, and what the current efforts are to restore the grounds and learn more about the individual and collective history. With us to take a closer look, Judy Gordon, a lifelong Southport resident. She helped to establish the nonprofit, the John N. Smith Cemetery Restoration and Preservation, Inc., where she is the board chair. Judy Gordon, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having us.
Gordon Walker is also a member of the board of the John N. Smith Cemetery Restoration and Preservation Organization. Gordon Walker, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Good to be here.
And Sarah Lowry is director of geophysics and an archaeologist at New South Associates, the firm that undertook the project to locate and establish the existence of the unmarked graves. Sarah Lowry, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And we're inviting your questions on this Wednesday. Have you heard of the John N. Smith Cemetery in Southport? How do you think the community should memorialize its past and honor its ancestors? You can call us during the live Wednesday edition at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Judy Gordon, I know probably most of our listeners will not have heard of the John N. Smith Cemetery in Southport. Tell us, first of all, where it's located and what it looks like.
The John N. Smith Cemetery is located on East Leonard Street. It's almost in the heart of Southport, just a little bit past the historical district area marked off. Right now, it's looking good because there's been a lot of efforts put into it by the community, the Beautification Committee, Southport, and other volunteers. So now it's looking good.
And when did those efforts to restore the cemetery really get underway, Gordon Walker?
Well, I think when we created the nonprofit organization about 3 years ago, we realized that by becoming a 501c3, it enabled us to solicit donations that were necessary for the maintenance effort, but also to solicit funds that could be used for installing a fence around it so as to provide some kind of higher aesthetic integrity to the cemetery, but also to safeguard the headstones that were there. So I would say within the last 3 or 4 years, prior to that, the black churches in Southport were doing the best job they could. But I think, as Judy can reference much better than I, is that the congregations within black churches are shrinking. And so being able to make certain that this effort became a community-wide effort and not just one for the black churches to pursue was very important to us.
So I just want to make sure that we paint this picture accurately. 3 years is not a very long time when you're looking at through the lens of restoring approximately 3 acres. Judy Gordon, what did it look like before this nonprofit was launched 3 years ago? When we talk about a neglected cemetery, what does that mean?
And actually, the efforts began in 2011.
I'm sorry.
And Gordon has joined us after that, so he may not even remember that. But the efforts itself began in around 2011. And the cemetery didn't look quite as bad as it used to, I won't say maybe 15, 20 years ago, because the city had been going in there and cleaning it up. They've cleaned a lot of brushes. It was overgrown with the brushes covering the stones and growing up and, you know, trees, brushes. You know how it would look, ordinary cemetery being ignored. But when our efforts began, it was still being neglected to the point that people were going in and leaving their trash when they wanted to, walking their dogs, and even the burials, the people were not, the funeral homes were not particular about how they left the grounds when they did their interment. So being aware that someone is tending to this has made it, has kept it a lot more presentable as far as in appearance. The things, people are more respectful of it now.
How did New South Associates get involved? At what point, Judy Gordon, during this restoration process, when you started, you know, pulling up some of those overgrown parts of the cemetery and taking care of it and putting up, at what point did you say, we think there are graves here that are not marked? We think there are graves here that we can't see. Or did you always know that?
I always knew that.
How did you know that?
I know that because as a child, during Memorial Day, the community always went out and cleaned the graves, made it presentable because there was always a program going on during Memorial Day. And so we went out, we'd have to take those shells off the graves. They were decorated with conch shells or clam shells or some kind of seashells. We'd have to take the shells off the graves and pull the grass out and rake it up. So. And knowing that and just walking through and remembering what it looked like during that time and seeing some of the seashells in the areas where the graves are, we knew there were graves there.
Sarah Lowry with New South Associates, you spent a good year or more talking with the folks who are working on this restoration and preservation effort. But it was fairly recently that you undertook doing a survey of half the cemetery just to see what's there.
Yeah, we were out there in November of 2017 when we actually conducted the what we would refer to as the fieldwork portion. But we spent a long time talking back and forth with the folks on the cemetery committee, talking about what they needed and what was going to serve their purposes and their project goals the best.
And what was the technology that you used to actually do this survey?
We used a ground-penetrating radar, which is what we refer to as a shallow geophysics method. And it works through sending electromagnetic energy through the ground, which reflects off of changes in the subsurface. And those changes, we record them back in our computer. And what we're looking for is the kind of change that would be created when you dig a hole to bury someone, like a grave shaft. Typically, we're not seeing the actual bones of the person. We're looking for just the soil changes. And they'd be very, in this case particularly, very subtle soil changes because we're talking about older graves and graves that might not have been buried in kind of the modern casket or coffin that you see today.
And so then when you undertake this project to kind of map what might be under the ground there, and Judy Gordon tells you, I know there are a lot of graves here that are not marked. Are you getting kind of a survey of the marked and the unmarked? You're seeing everything that's there.
Yeah, we definitely, and what we are fortunate, it's in this cemetery, the John N. Smith Cemetery, that a surveyor, Owen Gidlow, had come out and volunteered his time to make a map of all the markers. So we're able to take that map and put it together with our map and tell them which graves we think are marked and which graves we think are unmarked, which I think... neither Judy or I were surprised to see that number of unmarked graves.
So give us the numbers then, Judy Gordon. How many graves do you actually know about at this point, and how many of those graves are unmarked? I mean, is it sort of like we said 900 unmarked graves. That's what was recently discovered doing half of this cemetery. Is that right? Or is it 900 graves total, or how many graves are we talking about?
Sarah?
We had 891 what we call probable burials, and of those, 133 were associated with markers. So, gosh, I'd have to do the math there.
Wow.
On the subtraction. And that's half the cemetery, so that's an acre and a half. The other half does have more markers. We did concentrate our efforts on the area with fewer markers.
And you're planning to undertake the other half soon? Sarah Lowe.
Yeah, yeah. We are scheduled to be back out there in April.
And do you have any idea what you expect to find in the other half?
I would be, I think we would expect where we have existing family plots, and Judy might be able to comment a little bit more on this, to see unmarked graves in those plots. So you'd see a row of markers, three or four markers, and then an unmarked grave maybe next to them. This is pretty common in cemeteries with a lot of markers. You might see just one person in a group that didn't get a marker for lots of reasons.
And I understand that a lot of these graves had temporary markers that then were lost somehow. Judy Gordon, can you explain to us why they would have gotten temporary markers, what those looked like, and then how they got lost?
What I think the most of them that I remember that were there were the metal temporary markers that the funeral homes initially give you. And I think that they're lost because with the lawnmowers, the weed eaters, they cannot stand under that. And I think that's what happened to those. And, you know, once they're moved, if they're moved in any way, you don't know where to put it if you don't know the cemetery. So they just got destroyed.
And Gordon Walker, I'll come to you first when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. We're learning today about the John N. Smith Cemetery in Southport, why this African-American burial ground has been neglected for so long, and what we're learning about this part of North Carolina history. We want to hear from you today. If you have a question about this project, you can call us during the live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're learning today about the efforts to restore and preserve the John N. Smith Cemetery in Southport, a roughly 3-acre burial ground for a still unknown number of people, in large part due to decades of neglect, loss of grave markers, many graves simply with no markers. We're taking your questions about this piece of North Carolina history today. Sarah Lowry, archaeologist and director of geophysics at New South Associates, is here. Judy Gordon, she is chair of the John N. Smith Restoration and Preservation Board, and Gordon Walker, also a member of that board. Want to hear from you on this Wednesday. You can either call us at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. Just before we went to break, Gordon Walker, Judy Gordon was explaining the fact that many of these graves never got more than the temporary marker that the funeral home put on the grave, which is why so many of them got lost over the years with lawnmowers and leaf blowers and all kinds of power tools. But you say that a lot of those folks who were buried there probably also couldn't afford grave markers.
Yes, or the best marker they could afford was a wooden marker, which obviously wasn't going to stand up to weather conditions and so forth. And also, and Sarah may be able to comment on this, the quality of the soil being very sandy is that things sink into that soil. And so one of our jobs right now is unearthing some headstones and discovering people that were buried there as a result of that. But I think this really kind of points to that the neglect and disrepair of African-American cemeteries really does point to the broader challenge of discovering and preserving Black history. And so while it's very, very important for us to be able to get the cemetery on a par with the other two cemeteries in Southport, we do believe it's going to bring forth a better understanding of the contributions that Black people made to the well-being of Southport and really understand the implications of race and what impact that has on life today. I really believe it's kind of like it's a window to the past that can be a gateway to a better understanding of the need for us to come together.
Why was there a separate cemetery for African-American people in Southport?
Well, it's my understanding in North Carolina, you were allowed to have segregated cemeteries up until 1975. So that's, you know, black people weren't allowed to go to, you know, the same schools, or they weren't allowed to go to the same businesses. So they also weren't allowed to be buried in the same cemeteries as white people.
Sarah Lowry with New South Associates, you're nodding. You've worked on other cemeteries that are burial grounds for people of color around North Carolina. What are some of the things that you've learned?
So this is a cemetery. We'd refer to this as a post-emancipation cemetery, so a cemetery that first started to become used, you know, after emancipation. And as Gordon said, you know, the cemeteries were segregated. And you see a lot of these common themes, missing markers, or people not recognizing what truly is a marker in an African-American cemetery. So, Judy mentioned the shells. And people maybe not looking at shells as a marker, because we think of a marker as a manufactured stone that you buy or a funeral home provides. So using field stones as markers, or just a found stone and placing it on the mark on a grave is really common. And one of the things that Gordon mentioned is loss of this history, loss of black history in North Carolina. And something else we really want to emphasize, and we see a lot in these African American cemeteries, is this is the record. People think that there's paper written down somewhere in an archive, but and this is true with John N. Smith. The cemetery is the record. That is what we have of that history. So we don't have it somewhere else. And by preserving that place, we're preserving that history.
And I want to get into what we do know about some of the people buried there, including your great-grandfather, Judy Gordon. But first, briefly, Sarah Lowry, Gordon talked about the fact that as a geophysicist, you would be able to explain kind of the layers of sediment and sand and rock that might be there and how this has affected these graves.
It's kind of this is a coastal cemetery where we're dealing with a lot of sand, which is shifting, and we don't see some of the things in this cemetery that we might see in other cemeteries that are up in the Piedmont or in more clay soils, where you'll see depressions where collapsed coffins or caskets have created depressions in the ground, and that's just because the sand comes and fills it in again, and that's one thing, and you, sand is also a very uniform soil, which can help us in as far as graves will contrast very strongly with that, but they can also hurt us, because sometimes you don't see as much of a difference between the grave shaft and the surrounding soils in the geophysics. But in this case, it actually produced really good results, because we didn't have a whole lot of rocks or other things producing reflections in the ground, just graves.
How deeply are these remains buried?
Not as deep as most people think. the 6 feet under is definitely a myth when it comes to historic graves. I think we're dealing with anywhere from a foot and a half to 3 to maybe 5 feet, something like that.
Wow. Judy Gordon, you talked in the first segment about growing up and having this annual cleaning of the graves around Memorial Day. Your great-grandfather is buried there. Tell us first who he was.
He was the first black educator in Brunswick County.
Where did he teach?
He taught in Southport, and there was a school up in Winnebago that he taught there as well. And I'm told that he also taught in some part of Georgia. I haven't been able to confirm that, but I have been told that.
Do you know what he taught? Was it a subject, or was it general education?
General during that time. From what I've heard from people that he actually taught, it was just a general education.
What is his name?
His name is Frank Gordon.
And when did he live and die? Okay, that's all right if you don't have it in front of you.
Well, what I do remember, now, he said in an article that was printed by the State Post-Pilot, that he was 9 years old when the Civil War was over. He was born a slave, and he was 9 years old when the war was over.
He was born a slave, and then 9 years old, the war ended, and do you know what happened to him, how he grew up after that, where he lived?
Well, he said that, and I don't know what happened to his mother and father, but he did have sisters and brothers, and he said that there were days when they would go out and they would hunt for rags. They would find rags and sell them in order to get food for the family. And he said he was taught, there were ladies that in the community, and they taught him how to read.
And how did you learn about this? Does this come down through your family? Is there any written record of this? Did he leave letters behind?
He did not. My first knowledge of that was an article printed by the State Book Pilot back years ago. I can't remember. I have a copy of the article, but Mr. Harper did an interview of him before he passed, and these are things that he said. And he would go out and work. There was a gentleman there also that would teach him numbers, as he calls it, and he would go out and earn extra money to pay him to teach him numbers, how to, you know, do arithmetic, in other words.
Do you have other family members buried in the John N. Smith Cemetery, Judy Gordon?
I do. I have an uncle there that was one of the Buffalo soldiers. He's there. As a matter of fact, it was Frank Gordon's son. My grandmother and grandmother, grandfather, uncles, my mother, sisters, brothers, they're buried there, cousins.
This cemetery teachers. Is no longer an active cemetery. Is it?
It is an active cemetery.
People are still being buried there.
Yes.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons, if I could interject, is that we contracted with New South, is wanting to be certain that new interments were on top of existing interments, which had been a problem. So now what we're doing is being able to identify where the unmarked site, grave sites are, and we will raise the money so as to put some kind of markers there. So families who think that there might be a space there for them will know whether there is or not. It was really very interesting comment that a gentleman made when we were having a conversation. He said, you know, I had planned to be buried there, but it looks like there may not be enough room for me there anymore. So he's now in his late 80s. And he never really kind of believed in cremation, but he's informing his family members that cremation would be an option and for him because of that.
Some of the other people that we know something about buried there include Abram Galloway.
Yes.
Judy Gordon, can you tell us who that was?
He was a Civil War soldier. That's all I know about him.
Is not Abraham Galloway. There's another.
No, there is another one. This is a different one. He has family there that I know, but that's all I know about him is that he was a Civil War soldier.
Elias Gore?
Yes, he's there.
And who was he?
He was called the Gentle Giant, tall, I think. He was over 7 feet, I understand. He was a fisherman. They tell me he was a very gentle person. He has relatives there. As a matter of fact, one of his nieces, a great nieces, is on our board.
On the board of the John N. Smith Cemetery Restoration and Preservation Nonprofit. There were shells. Judy Gordon, you mentioned conch shells, other kinds of seashells, cowrie shells found on graves. Sarah Lowry from New South Associates, can you tell us what that tradition is about?
It's really common in coastal cemeteries and going up from South Carolina, Georgia, South Carolina, and up to this part of North Carolina. It's really believed to be a West African tradition coming from the slaves that were brought from West Africa to farm the plantation system in the coastal, in what we call the Gullah Geechee cultures of these low country cemeteries. And they were, I believe, Judy maybe can help me out here a little bit, but the things that were associated with water and the sea were supposed to be helping people get to the afterlife. So
Judy Gordon, would you like to expand on that?
I only know what Sarah knows. And the poem that I read, you know, the water brought us here and it would take us back.
And leaving those shells and other grave offerings on graves is very common in this part of the country. So broken bottles, personal effects of the person who was buried mm-hmm. there, things that would help them in the afterlife.
Now, we understand, Sarah Lowry, that you're using ground-penetrating radar to establish the existence of graves and determine where they might be. How, Gordon Walker, is your organization, the John N. Smith Cemetery Restoration and Preservation, Inc., going about finding out the identities of the people buried there and then the history there?
Yeah, finding the identities is a challenging task, and I will punt to Judy here in a second. I mean, the fact that we can find them on what might be a family plat or plot would indicate that they are family members, so we may be able to discover their last name. I don't think we'll be able to really learn very much about their history, but Judy's the one that's really been spending a lot of time researching this. I think it's also of value to recognize that completing this job, which we will be doing the end of April, and we're trying to raise the money now to be able to do that. The fact that those will occur near where a lot of existing headstones are will probably indicate to us, give us greater opportunity to identify some of the unmarked sites as a result of that.
Judy Gordon, how are you learning about the identities of the people and the stories of those people buried there? How are you collecting that?
Well, the way I'm learning about them, I actually started out there was with a book that was printed by the Southport Historical Society, I believe, somewhere in 1980s. And I took that book and I started working because they had a section in there for John N. Smith Cemetery, using that and looking that up with this heritage.com or one of those ancestry sites. And you're going in there, I can find the death certificates, find out where they're buried, and from finding where the mother or the child, census records, things that refer you to other records. And also, my family was a great collector of obituaries.
That's useful.
yes. And they were a great collector. And not just my family, but families in the community that I have borrowed theirs to find out where they're buried and the history, the history of some of that. My great uncle was a funeral director, and he also kept some records of the people that he picked up and he buried. And it's a continual thing because I find out that I can look on the death certificate, and even if I know that maybe the father is there, I may not know the wife is there, but I can find out the wife's name, and I can go look at her death certificate, find out where she's buried, and that has led me to other burials, just finding out the relatives from the death certificates, because most of the time the resource, the person that provided the information, was a relative.
You've alluded to the fact that there were five black churches that were sort of the collective caretakers of this cemetery before the nonprofit launched to really do the job. Where are these five churches? They're certainly not all in Southport.
Yes, they are.
They are?
They are.
There are five black churches in Southport.
Yes.
And what are those churches? Can you tell us their names?
Yes. Well, there's the church that I attend, St. James A.M.E. Zion Church. There's the Brown Chapel A.M.E. Zion Church. There's Mount Carmel A.M.E. Church. There's Friendship Baptist Church. And there is the First Baptist Missionary Church. And they're all in Southport.
And it's interesting, three or four of them are on Lord Street.
Oh, we have two on Lord Street.
How apropos. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's an exploration of the John N. Smith Cemetery in Southport, where hundreds of unmarked graves were recently located. Here to answer your questions on this Wednesday, Judy Gordon, Chair of the John N. Smith Restoration and Preservation Board, Gordon Walker, also a member of that board, and Sarah Lowry, archaeologist and director of geophysics at New South Associates. If you have your own question, you can call us during the live Wednesday edition at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. In reference to the cemetery, I've heard people say Smithville. What's the difference between Smithville and Southport?
Well, Smithville was originally Southport.
So it's the same geographic area that is now Southport. Mm-hmm. When did that change?
I think it was 1792.
A little while ago. What are the local efforts that you're getting towards support? Now, I'm holding here a copy of a resolution in support of the John N. Smith Cemetery from the city of Southport. Gordon Walker, when was this resolution adopted, and what does it mean?
Well, I think it means a lot. It was adopted in fall of 2017. And it recognizes the fact that the efforts that are being made by the board to maintain the cemetery and preserve for its legacy is important to the city as a whole. And I also like the fact that it underscores the contributions that the black citizens have made to Southport and to the benefit of everybody, not just to their own community.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. It's a tour of a local African-American cemetery, the John N. Smith Cemetery in Southport. After this break, you'll have one more segment to get your question in on this Wednesday. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today we're learning about the John N. Smith Cemetery in Southport, why it's been neglected for so many decades, and how it follows the national pattern of neglected cemeteries housing the remains of people of color. And we're learning about recent efforts to restore this burial ground and uncover the identities and histories of the people buried there. Here to answer your questions on this Wednesday, Judy Gordon, Chair of the John N. Smith Cemetery Restoration and Preservation Board, Gordon Walker, also a member of that board, and Sarah Lowry, archaeologist and director of geophysics at New South Associates, the firm that performed the ground-penetrating radar survey work, which identified the locations of hundreds of unmarked graves. If you have a question for our guests, you can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. It's the last segment, so you have just a few minutes left to ask your own question. Just before we went to break, Gordon Walker, you were explaining the resolution passed by the city of Southport and its support for the restoration and preservation of the John N. Smith Cemetery. What are you getting specifically from Southport now besides that resolution?
Oh, well, we are receiving support from the Historical Society of Southport, which I think is very meaningful. As Judy noted early, the John N. Smith Cemetery is right just outside the historical section of Southport, and we would like to make certain that this cemetery becomes part and parcel of that historical district of Southport, and so we're hoping that this resolution enables that to happen. And I will say we're very pleased that the Historical Society has stepped forward over the last year and a half to 2 years and has donated some funds and is now working with us to put up some historical signage at the cemetery. So to me, that's the type of inclusiveness that is one of our goals of the work that we're doing, is for people to recognize this John N. Smith Cemetery as a community asset for the community as a whole. It's not just important to the black community of Southport. And I do want to make certain I also note the fact that we have received support from AARP North Carolina as well. They're one of your underwriters. They have provided volunteers to help clean up, and they've also donated some funds to us.
We had a call to, Bonnie from Southport says, I want to commend Judy Gordon and Gordon Walker for their work in Southport. She says, I've lived here for 7 years and have seen the progress over the years. In an opinion piece, the Washington Post pointed out that nearly a year ago, Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe signed a bill allocating $34,000 to restore and preserve Evergreen Cemetery and the nearby East End Cemetery, two neglected African-American cemeteries in that state. The piece says that Virginia for decades has funded preservation efforts for Confederate cemeteries. You're starting to see some local support from the city of Southport. What about the state of North Carolina? Are there federal preservation efforts that you can tap into, Gordon Walker?
Well, I would certainly like to see North Carolina emulate what Virginia did and provide funding that could be used towards maintenance of African-American cemeteries throughout North Carolina. I think that was a major initiative. It had the support of the governor and the General Assembly, and it's my understanding it's receiving more funds this year, and that would be very appropriate. We are planning to pursue National Historical Registry designation for the cemetery, and we will be working with the state office that oversees that during the year. So maybe by gaining that designation, that will help our fundraising activities.
And the John N. Smith Cemetery organization received a grant from Orton Foundation.
Most timely, they provided funds towards the GPR work that Sarah's company has done, and they also provided funds that enable us to do about 60% of the fencing around the cemetery. So we're still trying to raise funds to complete the fencing, complete the GPR work, and to be able to purchase markers for all these unmarked sites that we're identifying.
Judy Gordon, there's a local school getting involved in this project?
We're hoping. We have a subcommittee that is working on that with the teachers at Southport Primary School, and we're still hopeful. We haven't been able to complete that, but we're still trying, and we're still hopeful.
One of the people working on this project told our producer that the African-American population in Southport is decreasing. Do we know why, Judy Gordon?
Well, my opinion is the older people are dying. The younger people are moving out. When they move, they go to college, they go away to find other jobs, and they're not moving back.
Southport is not conducive for the next generation. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think Southport has become more of a retirement place. You know, the younger people are not moving back. And also, locally, it's beginning to be an expensive place to live as well.
Gordon Walker, did you want to add something to that?
Well, I would just footnote what Judy said. I mean, it's a gentrification of Southport that's occurring, and the cost of real estate is going up and up, as we know is true in New Hanover County as well. But it's an attractive place to live, and so it becomes more and more difficult for people that have lived there for generations to be able to afford it.
Sarah Lowry with New South Associates, as a geophysicist, an archaeologist, an anthropologist, and probably eight other things that I don't know about, can you through the lens of having looked at other historic burial grounds with people of color, can you talk about what we gain when we really start to understand what's there and the history of the people there?
Sure. This is a part of American history, not just African American history. You know, American history that is really, I mean, both interesting and important for us to remember, because this is part of our country would not exist without these people who worked in these. Worked in this part of the world and all over the United States. And we gain their stories, as we're hearing a little bit about today. And we also have a lot that we don't know that we can find out from these cemeteries and from the, from the information that's inside, both the archaeological information, the oral history and the oral traditions, and the architecture as well, you know, the architect cemetery architecture, the type of markers and the type of the funerary remains, things that are left behind. And if I could just comment briefly on the federal protection,
yes.
I know right now the Society for Historic Archaeology is working with cultural heritage partners on that very issue. The reason, you know, the federal allocation of funds and resources towards African American cemeteries, specifically Alma Adams, who's a North Carolina representative, and Representative Dennis McEakin of the Congressional Black Caucus are working on developing a African American Burial Grounds Network bill in Congress right now. And I believe there's draft legislation in Congress right now, and this bill would be directing federal government training and support and community connections and resources towards people who want to preserve African American cemeteries. So that's kind of in progress and in Congress right now. So hopefully things will change in the future.
Gordon Walker, is this the first you're hearing about this?
It is the first. Okay. So thanks to Coastline for bringing us together to learn this. That's encouraging.
Sarah Lowry, can you just can you think of a time that you were working on one of these projects, maybe either John N. Smith or any other similar project in North Carolina, and you uncovered something that just made you say, wow, if people only understood this, or there's this, like, what would it be?
I think one of the interesting things, I was working in a subdivision. This is in Mecklenburg County, and it's another African-American cemetery. We also think it's post-emancipation, similar age, but there was not a single marked grave in the cemetery, or not as something you or I would see as a marked grave. There were lots of depressions, lots of rough field stone markers, what we call markers placed in the ground. And we went out and did a survey where we mapped all those graves and then did a GPR survey on top of that. And it was surrounded by houses on all four sides. So in the middle of a subdivision and full of giant, beautiful old trees. And residents of that subdivision kept coming by and being like, there's a cemetery back there. And I think that that's something that, like, this is a whole segment of history that is just, it's disappearing, and it's getting surrounded by subdivisions, and roads are getting built, and I think that it's something that's, these cemeteries don't look like your European American, your, you know, neat lines of graves and manicured lawns, and they never were supposed to, and I think that there's something really special about that, and I think that that's one thing that I would say as I. We need to expand our understanding of what a cemetery looks like, and I think that it can be beautiful in lots of different ways.
Judy Gordon, you've talked about the fact that most of the people working on this effort to restore and preserve John N. Smith Cemetery are, they're not millennials. Can you talk about what you feel is the urgency on this project?
The urgency on this project is the few people that know where the people are buried are dying. And that's the urgency. The people, even the efforts that we're putting forth, you know, we're the older people, and if we don't do it now, there will be a lot more history lost.
As you go about collecting the stories of the people whose stories and identities you can collect, where are you putting this? Where would you like it to be eventually?
Right now, we have it in computer on drive, but we're finding out that we can send this to the digital North Carolina, and I think that will be the targeted place for us to keep this, to preserve it, that it will be accessible to anyone who wants to see it. What's the name of the place? The Digital North Carolina.
Oh, you're right. That's what it's called. Digital North Carolina.
Yes. Yeah. We've been told that we can store it there. It can be stored there.
And do you think that eventually this could become part of the historical curriculum for kids growing up?
Well, and that's a small part of what we're trying to do with the primary school. You know, if we can start there and build on that, I think it can be, yes.
Who are some of the – Gordon Walker, you wanted to follow up on that.
I would just say a curious note here is trying to find out about John N. Smith. you know,
the cemetery's namesake.
Yeah, know he was buried there in 1874, 1876. And
the cemetery wasn't established until 1880, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So he was buried in a place that was what, just a yard or what? I mean
– Probably just a field. Or,
a field.
Yeah, because it was really going way back. It was Judy's church that purchased the 2 acres, which was the original site of the cemetery. And John Smith, I think, since his headstone was there, they said, let's call it the John N. Smith Cemetery. So we reached out to Henry Louis Gates, who does the PBS show Finding Your Roots, and relying somewhat on his network of learning about ancestors, we're hoping to learn something about John N. Smith. I mean, really all we know is he was a slave, we presume. And it's interesting that, as you noted, Southport used to be called Smithville. I doubt if it was named after John Smith. But as one person noted, there was also a governor that Smith, Benjamin Smith, I believe it was, who lived in Southport, was governor of North Carolina. So is there some connection there between John N. Smith and a person that used to be governor of North Carolina? It could be something we'd like to find out.
So you're saying the only thing we know about John N. Smith is his name and the year he died.
That's it.
That's what we know.
That's all we know about this guy. Yeah.
There are some other notable people. I'm sure everybody has a story, and everybody who is buried there is notable. But some of the ones that we know about, they're the first black magistrate in Brunswick County. Judy Gordon, can you tell us about him?
Yes. As far as we know, Ephraim Swain is buried there, and he was first black magistrate in Brunswick County.
And when would that have been?
That I believe Mr. Swain died in the 90s.
So relatively recently.
Yes.
Some of the first African-American people to work with the police department?
Yes. We understand, and we're trying to confirm this. Mr. Roscoe Davis was with the sheriff's department first in Brunswick County, as far as we know.
There's some dispute over the firsts here, I understand.
Well, as far as, yes. We did have another name. But I can't remember the other name. But we're trying to confirm. No, the other name was Brown. There was a Frank Brown, a Frank Brown, and a Roscoe Davis. And we're trying to confirm. And it may not be that hard because I understand. I'm pretty sure that Frank Brown was older, much older than Roscoe Davis. So it's just a matter of confirming that. We're working on that as well.
And one thing that might be of interest to your audience, certainly was to me, is the Buffalo Soldiers and what they represented, that these were veterans of the Civil War that were recruited to go out as part of a cavalry and take over land that was owned by the Native Americans, which is an interesting irony in itself. But then as a result of Judy's research and learning about her great uncle, came to find out that the Buffalo Soldiers actually had a regiment in World War I, which I didn't know. I didn't know that the Buffalo Soldiers existed that long. So again, this is an example of what we're learning as we learn more and more about the people that are buried there.
Okay, just a few seconds left, but let's say that you've completed the work on this cemetery. It's restored, it's preserved, and you found all the histories of people. What do we have now that we didn't have before? Judy Gordon.
I think we have, for one, would be a more complete picture of Southport history.
That's this edition of Coastline. Judy Gordon, Gordon Walker, Sarah Lowry, thank you all for being with us today.
Thank you.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Caitlin Hanrahan was today's chief engineer. Caroline DeVries is our webmaster. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org, get the podcast, or find it on the WHQR app. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.